I had most of my notes up here, Dan. And I am missing. You didn't steal that one? There we go. Those are my review notes, because if you're like me, the class has gotten massive. There's just so much that's been going on, it's easy to forget as we go through the review. So we are in lesson 12, and if you're counting, 13 lessons we have this week and next week, and then we are done. And we go on to the Judah alone and the time of the captivity. Okay. So remember, we started off with, because of the sins of Solomon, we had political divide, very quickly followed by the spiritual divide when Jeroboam chose to build Dan and Bethel with the golden calves up there. And then we saw that there was the stability difference. Suddenly the south, because it is following God, is more stable, following after the lineage of David, whereas the north keeps having their lineage knocked off and the kings are being executed, or shouldn't say executed, they're being assassinated. Then after that, we have the time period of Elijah and with Ahab and Jehoshaphat. Ahab's influence, I just skipped three lessons. Sorry, I'm ready to get going on this lesson. Okay, so then we saw Ahab during the time of Elijah, and Ahab was a very wicked king, and he's taken the people further. They were worshiping in Dan and Bethel, but now they're worshiping foreign gods. So he's taken them beyond idolatry to idolatry for foreign gods. And Jehoshaphat, his great mistake. Anybody remember his great mistake? He's a really good king. Could have been an amazing king. What did he do wrong? He kept getting connected to the north. Alliances, alliance of marriage. So then what we saw was that Ahab in his wickedness did not die with him. And God had decreed that there was going to be judgment on him. And so we saw that coming, and it indeed did come. So Jehu, skip a few lessons, right? Elisha, sorry, this is pointless. Let's get to this lesson. I mean, at this point, are you going to remember anything of what I'm going through? You remember Jehu was brought about the punishment on Ahab. God told him, you're going to get four generations as a result of that. And last time what we saw was he got his four generations right there. Zechariah was the fourth generation. Now, in general, ignore what's on the right. Because what we're going to do at this point is we're going to stop going north, south, north, south, north, south. We got two lessons left. We're just going to finish off the south. And then we're going to finish off the north next week. But if you're looking at it from here, you can see that we're back to instability on the north. Zechariah only is king for 6 months. He's killed. Shalom comes in. He's only king for 1 month. He's killed. Manahem comes in. Pekahiah, his son, becomes king. He's killed. Pekah becomes king. Hoshea. And then they're just gone. So when we got done with Jeroboam, you're talking about 41 years left. Pretty much everybody who's born after Jeroboam becomes king, pretty much all of them are going to see the end of their kingdom. So it's come to an end. And what we're looking at this lesson is we're going to look at Judah headed up to the end of the northern kingdom. And quite frankly, in this lesson, what becomes really obvious to me is that they are very fortunate that it is not straight to captivity. In other words, that instead of it going to Judah alone, that it didn't just go divided kingdom, done. Because Judah's really going to find themselves in very sorry shape at the worst possible time. Okay, now notice, question number one, we're going to get to this, is who was king when Uzziah becomes king? We look up here, we can see this really easily, right? Jeroboam. Now, we talked about Jeroboam last week. We're going back in time just a little bit. So we actually got to Zechariah. I want you to go back just a little bit. Jeroboam is king. He's actually in the middle of his kingdom, of his reign. And Uzziah then becomes king. And you'll notice as we go through our questions, you see how many kings are going to be around during Uzziah's reign. Uzziah starts when he's 16. It must have been intimidating because Jeroboam's already been king for 14 years, almost as long as Uzziah has even been alive. He becomes king, but he's going to see Jeroboam fall. He's going to see Zechariah. He's going to Shalom. He's going to see Menahem. He's going to see Pekahiah. I don't have it accurate up here. He's actually going to see Pekahiah fall, and he's going to see Pekah become king very shortly at the end of his reign. So a whole lot of kings on the north. Really a lot of stability on the south. So we've already answered this. Who was king? Well, it was Jeroboam who was king. So we're going back just a little bit. Was Uzziah a good or a bad king? He's a good king. Sort of. I mean, he's a good king, right? But this is an interesting way of saying he's a good king. So in 2 Kings chapter 15, verses 3 and 4, it says, he did right in the sight of the Lord according to all that his father Amaziah had done. Only the high places were not taken away. The people still sacrificed and burned incense on the high places. Well, if I remember, we'll talk about verse 4 here in a second. But he's a good king. Who's he like? It's not like David. He's like Amaziah. Now, tell me about Amaziah. That was last week. What kind of a king was Amaziah? If you say good king, I will accept that because the Bible tells us he was a good king. But he was a good king who did not follow God like David. He followed God like his father. So I could go back and say, what was Joash like? And you could tell me, well, Joash was a good king, and that would be accurate. The Bible tells us he was a good king, but he was not a good king like following David either. Joash was a good king until he wasn't. Did I say Amaziah before? I hope I did. Amaziah, his dad, Uzziah's, see how hard this is? Uzziah, also called Azariah, whose father Amaziah, was a sort of good king. He was a good king until he wasn't. He did some good things, but then he really did some bad things to where he's ultimately executed, assassinated for his wickedness. And now Amaziah really went off the rails, worshiping other gods. And Uzziah is then told, well, you're a good king like him. That's not the greatest compliment in the world. But Uzziah really is a pretty impressive king. God's going to let him be around for 52 years, and he is going to really have a successful reign for the most part. All right. So what was the key to his success? Do I have a question on how successful was he? Yes, the next one is that. So if you go over to 2 Chronicles chapter 26, and remember, 2 Chronicles is going to have more detail on the southern kingdom than 1 and 2 Kings is going to have. But in 2 Chronicles 26 and verse 5, it says, he continued to seek God in the days of Zechariah, who had understanding through the vision of God, and as long as he sought the Lord, God prospered him. And that is just the epitome of the lessons for us for here. It is, as long as he was serving God, God was blessing him, and he was fantastic. He was great, as long as that was the case. And so he has this fantastic advisor named Zechariah, not the guy who writes the Minor Prophet book, different guy. But here's Zechariah is somebody who's leading him the right direction. So Uzziah then is a good king, but not just a good king, he's a successful king. And that's what you need to think about with Uzziah. He makes the south strong. Now, that wasn't the best statement in the world. It's not him making the south strong. He serves God, and God makes the south strong. So what accomplishments does Uzziah have? Well, let's pick up in verse 6 of chapter 26. And we'll read down to verse 15. And remember, this is the country that recently had been falling to the north of all places. Now he went out and warred against the Philistines and broke down the wall of Gath and the wall of Jabna and the wall of Ashdod. And he built cities in the area of Ashdod and among the Philistines. God helped him against the Philistines and against the Arabians who lived in Gerbal and the Meunites. The Ammonites also gave tribute to Uzziah, and his fame extended to the border of Egypt, for he became very strong. Moreover, Uzziah built towers in Jerusalem at the corner gate and at the valley gate and at the corner buttress and fortified them. He built towers in the wilderness and hewed many cisterns, for he had much livestock, both in the lowland and in the plain. He also had plowmen and vine dressers in the hill country and the fertile lands, for he loved the soil. Moreover, Uzziah had an army ready for battle, which entered combat by divisions according to the number of their muster, prepared by Jael the scribe and Messiah the official, under the direction of Hananiah, one of the king's officers. The total number of the heads of the households of the valiant warriors was 2,600. Under their direction was an elite army of 307,500 who could wage war with great power to help the king against the enemy. Moreover, Uzziah prepared for all the army shields, spears, helmets, body armor, bows, and sling stones. In Jerusalem, he made engineers of war invented by skillful men to be on the towers and on the corners for the purpose of shooting arrows and great stones. Hence his fame spread afar, for he was marvelously helped until he was strong. So you talk about becoming strong. His border is spreading. The people that had been a problem, the Philistines, the Ammonites, he is conquering them. They're paying him money. He is fame goes all the way down to Egypt. He's got a big army, a trained army, an armed army. He's got defense. And it takes the time to say, on top of his defense, he now has engines of war. He has mechanical devices that will shoot arrows and that will launch large stones. I'm thinking like catapults, things like that. It's something where nobody wants to attack the South. Why'd all that happen? Because he sought God. God was his priority, and as a result, God made him strong and the nation strong. And so if we're looking at the history of the southern kingdom, Uzziah really should come up as one of those good kings because he is very blessed by God, because he really did follow God, and then he became really strong. Oh, there it is, the second part of the question. What then, where's... Oh, yeah. I can't even read my own question. What did this success lead to? Pride. So if Uzziah was in a job interview and they asked him, what is your greatest weakness? He would humbly say, my greatest weakness is my greatness. But that really is his greatest weakness. He becomes powerful. He becomes strong. And he thinks, I belong in the Lord's presence. He makes the mistake. You remember Aaron and Miriam come up to Moses and say, you're not so great, Moses. God speaks to us too. We should be given the same honor. And then, well, let's see, Miriam gets leprosy. That's kind of relates to this story. And then later on, you have the rebellion of Korah, where the people are saying, again, Moses, you're not that great. We're all holy. We all should be able to serve God in the temple. They're not learning their lesson. Uzziah most certainly does not. So pick up in verse 16. But when he became strong, his heart was so proud that he acted corruptly, and he was unfaithful to the Lord his God, for he entered the temple of the Lord to burn incense on the altar of incense. By the way, where is the altar of incense in the temple? You have three choices: outer court, inside, or inside. It's inside. I mean, so yeah, he didn't go into the most holy place, but he went into the holy place. He went in where he absolutely positively is not allowed. No way. Nazariah, the priest, entered after him, and with him 80 priests of the Lord, valiant men. They opposed Uzziah the king. Now notice, there's not a nation in the world right now that's willing to oppose Uzziah. These priests just did. They opposed the king and said to him, it is not for you, Uzziah, to burn incense to the Lord, but for the priests, the sons of Aaron, who are consecrated to burn incense. Get out of the sanctuary, for you have been unfaithful and will have no honor from the Lord God. That was Uzziah's one warning. That's it. And his reaction was not turn around and get out. Uzziah, with a censer in his hand for burning incense, was enraged. And while he was enraged with the priests, the leprosy broke out on his forehead before the priests in the house of the Lord, besides the altar of incense. Azariah, the chief priest, and all the priests looked at him, and behold, he was leprous on his forehead, and they hurried him out of there. And he himself also hastened to get out, because the Lord had smitten him. King Uzziah was a leper to the day of his death, and he lived in a separate house, being a leper, for he was cut off from the house of the Lord. And Jotham his son was over the king's house, judging the people of the land. Now the rest of the acts of Isaiah, first to last, the prophet Isaiah, the son of Amos, he has written. So Uzziah slept with his fathers, and they buried him with his fathers in the field of the grave, which belonged to the kings, for they said, he is a leper. And Jotham his son became king in his place. And so we see that nobody was willing to go up against Jotham anymore. Uzziah, his fame had spread all over the place, but God could bring him down just like that. And that one moment when he got big-headed and thought, I did it, I belong in God's presence, I'm somehow equal, I'm somehow to be honored, that's the moment where everything falls apart. And how long is he a leper for? And beyond. Yeah. So notice when he died, they bury him like a leper, like he's still a leper. That followed him. Now, I don't know how many years it was, but this was something that derailed his reign, derailed his greatness. Go ahead, Alex.
All right. So is this a lesson like in humbleness? Because like you said, Uzziah also flees, like as much as the priests are like pushing him out of the temple because of his leprosy, but he also runs willingly because of this, and then he spends the rest of his days in a separate house. So do you think maybe he turned and returned to God after that point? Because I just feel like he would have.
Alex, I would always think, I look at people and I say, why did you not turn to God, right? You always think they should have. I don't know. I'm assuming he did. I'm assuming he's still a good king, right? But that's all assumption on my part. All I know is because of the law, he's required to then be separated. Barry. Maybe. We can't say very much because of faithful or unfaithful sons, as it turns out. Because unfaithful men are going to have faithful sons, and his faithful son is going to have an incredibly unfaithful son. So I don't know. I don't know. Really quickly, right here at the end, it did mention a prophet, so we should keep in mind, prophets start popping up a lot right in here. Because there's judgment of God is coming, and God keeps sending warning, keeps telling him, you need to turn around, or now it's too late. So which prophet did we just see showed up during Uzziah's reign? Isaiah, and if you go to Isaiah chapter 1, it says it's starting in Uzziah's reign. Isaiah starts his prophecies, and he's going to go all the way through, and he's going to go past. The people born right now are going to see the end for the north. This is just coming at them so quickly. So, the kings of the north, how many of them were good?
None.
How many of the kings of the south were good? See, I don't know the number. I didn't go back through and count, but I want you to keep track of something. When we say they're good, that's not always the whole story, is it? It is a relative term. And there's something that I think really, if we really should learn as we study the kings, not the divided kingdom, but I mean the kings. Did Saul start off pretty well? That was your area. Did he start off pretty good? He started off pretty good. Didn't last. Did David, was he a good king? Absolutely. Did it last? In his end is when we see him committing adultery and murder and then again counting the people and angering God once more. How about Solomon? Was he a good king? He had a good start? He had a great start. How'd he do towards the end? Really, really bad. Well, see, I mean, we could keep going through. We could go through to the last three generations or so. So you have Joash. Remember, I already told you, he was a good king for a while. Then the priest died, and all of a sudden he became a bad king. And then Amaziah, he was a good king until he wasn't a good king. And now you have Uzziah, he's a good king until he wasn't a good king. Can you see any potential practical lesson that God wants us to get as he gives us the history of these good kings? Anyone? Eric?
Well, I think, you know, it talks about that this world is not our home.
Yeah.
And that if you're the king of a country, you're going to be so tied into geopolitics that you're going to have so many people pulling you in so many different directions that eventually you start caving on your code or your morals or your religion. And I think that, you know, that idea of corruption at the top.
Power corrupts, right? And so the lesson, of course, is, thankfully, where none of us have power. Okay, go ahead, Rob.
Again, it shows the pattern that started in the very beginning.
Which is?
Adam, well, they both started out in just an incredible relationship with God. And so whatever span of time that eventually led them to question and getting all the way to now.
So 1 Corinthians chapter, okay, well, I'll hold off. Dan, go ahead.
That's why the Old Testament is an unfinished story.
Mm.
Because all of this, and then all of these guys, you have moments of shining brightness. You have Joshua. You have Josiah coming soon.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what all of these downfalls, they suck the energy out of the story. The one, you know, the day spring will come with healing in his wings, Malachi, right? All the way through it points to Jesus and our need for.
It certainly doesn't point to our greatness, does it? Barry?
I was just going to say, I probably have a better verse than you selected.
We'll vote in a second. No. Yeah, so we're going to call it a tie, okay? So 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 11, Paul says all these things are written for us, right? He's talking about the Old Testament. All this stuff we're looking at, it's written for us. What's 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 12 say? Well, what do you think we're supposed to learn when we see all these men who were standing fall? It is a lesson of humility for ourselves. It is fantastic that you are here. It is great. It is good that we have dedicated ourselves to God. But listen to the voices of the past and realize how easy it is for any one of us to go astray at any point in the future. We must always stay careful and stay humble because there is great danger. Great men before us have not stayed faithful the whole time. Now, I don't know what God's going to do with them on the day of judgment. I don't know the answer to that. All I know is I want to stay faithful to the end. I want to finish the race. And so you have to be careful. Okay. So after Uzziah, and I didn't ever mention this, but there is two different guys in the Bible. Remember Uzzah, not Uzziah. Those are two different guys. Uzzah's the one who reaches out to touch the Ark of the Covenant and dies. Uzziah, great king, who tries to reach out into the temple and basically do the same thing. All right, so Jotham becomes king. Pekah is king in the north. Is Jotham a good or bad king? He's a good king. Like whom? Like his father, which is good in this case. But it's not quite as good as being like David. So an interesting contrast happens here. So first off, we see that if you go over to 2 Kings 15, there's something that's been going on, and we haven't really paid attention to it, and now's a good time to do so. In 2 Kings 15, verses 34 and 35, when Jotham becomes king, it says, "He did what was right in the sight of the Lord. He did according to all that his father Uzziah had done. Only the high places were not taken away. The people still sacrificed and burned incenses on the high places. He built the upper gate of the house of the Lord." So he did some good. He's building up the house of the Lord. But he didn't remove the high places. What are the high places? Yeah, it is frequently idolatry. I mean, it is frequently a worship of other gods. There are occasions. There's one time, I think we're going to get later on in Chronicles, I think it's in the Judah alone time period, where it says that they worshiped only God at the high places, but they still did the high places. It's the wrong place. It is almost always the wrong place with the wrong god. And so what it's saying is Jotham, he's a good king, but the people are still worshiping in the wrong way and the wrong god. And if you were to go back, you would pay attention to the previous generations. And every time it said they were good kings, it says, but they didn't do this. And from our perspective, we might think that was a good thing. We might. Because it's upholding freedom of religion, right? So Jotham is choosing to serve God, but he's going to let the other people serve whoever they want. But this is not a democracy. This is a theocracy. This is where God is supposed to rule. And the king is supposed to uphold it. And so he is supposed to uphold service only to God. And so while Jotham's a good king, and Uzziah's a good king, and Amaziah was a good king, and Joash was a good king, they all of them are saying, but they didn't get rid of this. Pay attention, though, because we're going to get a contrast when we get to the next king, Ahaz. All right, so we find with Jotham in 2 Chronicles chapter 27 and verse 2, he's a good king. He did right in the sight of the Lord according to all that his father Uzziah had done. However, he did not enter the temple of the Lord. Nice little addition there. He didn't do that thing. That was good. But the people continued to act corruptly. Now we've got a problem. We've got a good king, but what kind of people do we have? Do we have a corrupt people? They are not serving God the way they ought to serve. All right. So as a result, what sort of problems did Jotham face? And this is back in 2 Kings 15 where it goes into this. Yeah, remember Uzziah was really powerful and strong. Nobody would threaten him. His name went all over the place. Jotham becomes king, and now all of a sudden things are closing in again. In this case, once again, it's Israel. And it's Aram, Syria, those kingdoms just to the immediate north that are squeezing in on them. Are they being successful? It doesn't seem like they're totally being successful, but his time period is not one of peace. He's building up, but it's not one of peace. In 2 Chronicles 27, verses 3 through 5, is where we see the limitations of it. Say, he built the upper gate of the house of the Lord, and he built extensively the wall of Ophel. Moreover, he built cities in the hill country of Judah, and he built fortresses and towers on the wooded hills. He fought also with the king of the Ammonites, and prevailed over them, so that the Ammonites gave him during that year 100 talents of silver, 10,000 cores of wheat, and 10,000 of barley. The Ammonites also paid him this amount in the second and third year. So Jotham became mighty because he ordered his ways before the Lord his God. So that's an important verse, right? Same thing. Uzziah does good. Why? Because God's with him. He serves God. Jotham is a good king and he's doing well. Still a time of not as much peace, but again, because he serves God. I don't know if you've noticed, but in verse 5, when it talks about the Ammonites give him 100 talents of silver, we had just recently seen that amount of money. That's how much money Amaziah had paid to the guys of the north to be his men, and then the prophet said, don't do that. So he said, oh, but what about the money? God just gave Jotham that much money, and then the next year gave him that much money again. And then the next year gave him that much money again, plus more. That's a lot of money, and God is certainly blessing Jotham. All right, so what was the key to Jotham's success? We just read it. He walked with the Lord. God was the key to his success. Okay, so from there we get to our final king that we're going to look at from the south. Technically, we should start with Hezekiah. I'm going to save that for Rod. I'm going to save it with a big, great question mark. Can the next king save the south? Can they turn the tide? Because while we've had a series of kind of good kings, and Uzziah, I would say a really good king, but we've had some problems, the south is now going to really crash. And during Jotham's time, good king, bad people. Ahaz, his son, becomes king, and Pekah and Hoshea, the last two kings of the north. But Ahaz is not going to do well at all. So, first off, is he a good or is he a bad king? He's a bad king. I kind of really give that away, don't I? So, 2 Chronicles 28, verse 1. Ahaz was 20 years old when he became king, and he reigned 16 years in Jerusalem. And he did not do right in the sight of the Lord as David his father had done. But he walked in the ways of the kings of Israel. He also had molten images for the Baals. Moreover, he burned incense in the valley of Ben-Hinnom and burned his sons in fire, according to the abominations of the nations which the Lord had driven out before the sons of Israel. He sacrificed and burned incense on the high places, on the hills, and under every green tree. Did you see the change that just happened? So the previous kings, they didn't remove the high places. This one uses them. He's gone a whole nother level. Who is he not behaving like? Well, that's kind of an understatement. He's not behaving like David. Who is he behaving like? He's, well, okay. The answer that it gives us in the text is kings of Israel. And he didn't just say the kings of Israel. He said he's behaving like somebody else. The Canaanites. He's not just behaving like the kings of Israel. What's going to happen during right here to the Israelites, the northern kingdom? They're about to get wiped out, and he's behaving like them. No, he's behaving worse than them. He's going back to the nations before Israel took the land, before the conquest, the nations that were living in such a way that God said, it is time for you to go and annihilate them, not kick them off the land, annihilate them, kill them all, don't let any of them survive. And God would, through the first five books of the Bible, he would detail, here are the sort of things they're doing. And Ahaz, in all his brilliance, said, oh, let's do that stuff. So yes, he is behaving not like David, not like his father, not like the good kings. He's behaving like Israel. He's behaving like the Canaanites. And suddenly we see that right now, right at this time period, the world is in a state of upheaval. Assyria listened to Jonah, and they weren't wiped out. And instead, they grew and they grew and they grew and they became the world's superpower. And right now, as Ahaz is king, Assyria is getting mighty and powerful, and they are starting to get to a point where they're like, and we will spread, and they are going to spread all over the place, and they're going to start conquering all sorts of nations. And right then is when the south gets a king who takes them down morally as far as they can go. Really, really bad timing. All right, so we saw to what degree, to the degree even that he would pass his children through the fire. So what struggles then does Ahaziah face during his reign? Yes, his friends. Right. So, if we pick up in verse 5 of 2 Chronicles 28, wherefore the Lord his God delivered him into the hand of the king of Aram, and they defeated him, and carried away from him a great number of captives, and brought them to Damascus, and he was also delivered into the hands of the king of Israel, who inflicted him with heavy casualties. For Pekah, the son of Remaliah, so this is now Aram, slew in Judah 120,000 in one day. Do you remember it talked about how strong and powerful Uzziah was? How big was his army? 300,000, 307,500, right? 120,000 just fell in one day. That's a massive amount of the army is just gone. They were all valiant men. Why? Because they had forsaken the Lord God of their fathers. And Zichri, a mighty man of Ephraim, slew Mesa, the king's son, and Azricam, the ruler of the house, and Elkanah, the second to the king. So now we have Israel, the north from Ephraim, attacking. And what just happened to the south? What just happened to Ahaz? He lost his son. He was just killed. He lost two of his absolute closest advisors have just been killed. Then in verse 8, the sons of Israel carried away captive of their brethren 200,000 women, sons, and daughters. And they took also a great deal of spoil from them and brought the spoil to Samaria. So we get here, and this is a captivity almost. He's being attacked. The army's being destroyed. 200,000 of his women and kids have just been taken away from the land and brought up to the capital of the north, to Samaria. The south is reeling. I mean, they are in terrible shape, not just morally, but now economically, physically. But they get up there, and a prophet of the Lord comes in. The prophet of the Lord was there in verse 9, whose name was Oded, and he went out to meet the army which came to Samaria and said to them, "Behold, because the Lord, the God of your fathers, was angry with Judah, he has delivered them into your hand, and you have slain them in a rage which has even reached heaven." So who's innocent here? Nobody. It's like Judah's getting this because of their sins, but the way you have behaved has been heard even in heaven. Now you are proposing to subjugate for yourselves the peoples of Judah and Jerusalem for male and female slaves? Surely do you not have transgressions of your own against the Lord your God? Now therefore listen to me and return the captives whom you captured from your brothers, for the burning anger of the Lord is against you. They're not innocent. And in fact, they are getting a front row seat of their very near future. They're doing this to the south, and it's a great victory, and they're rejoicing, but this is what's going to happen to them, to their wives, to their children, very, very soon. And so Oded says, be careful how you behave. You're not innocent. So some wise men in verse 12 are going to go through and convince the people to return them. And to their credit, they do return them. Those who are naked, they clothe. Those who are weak, they put on donkeys, and they bring them back. They bring them to Jericho and say, here's your people, and they go away. Now, let's really quickly get this with Ahaz. How's he doing in battle?
Not so good.
Why not? Because he turned against God. Now, all those people he lost in battle who were taken captive have marched away. He doesn't go and save them. He doesn't go and get them. They just suddenly get delivered back. Why did they get delivered back? Who intervened? God intervened. What would be the obvious lesson here if you're a king who's got any wisdom? What's the lesson?
Serve God.
Not what Ahaz thinks. Not the lesson he gets. At that time, in verse 16, King Ahaz sent to the kings of Assyria for help. Get the big boys. We'll go to the power. He is bringing on the destruction of the north. He is nearly bringing on the destruction of the south. So, who does he turn to next? Well, he turns to Assyria. How did he get their help? What did he pay? How did he get the payments? He gets the money from three places, one of which is the one I'm really focusing on. the temple. Yes, he goes into his own treasury. He goes into the prince's treasuries, but he goes into the temple. He goes towards God's place, steals from God to give to Assyria, and now Assyria will help us. And if you're paying attention to 2 Kings and 2 Chronicles, you kind of get two different sides to this. In one hand, it seems like Assyria does come down and help, and he does. But in 2 Kings, it says he doesn't help. How do you reconcile that? Well, I think it's pretty easy. Assyria just comes down and whoops everyone. Does he help in the sense that he stops Aram? Yes, he comes down. He's going to kill the king. He's going to take over Syria. Yeah, he does that. But he doesn't stop there. He doesn't say, oh, you guys are the ones who gave me money. You're my friends. You guys are now my servants. You guys are the ones who keep giving me money. Assyria is now a very big threat. And somewhere in there, and we're running out of time, but Ahaz goes up to Syria, up to Aram, this place that has just been conquered. Yes, they had conquered him, but they've just been conquered by the Assyrians. He sees their altar and says, that's an amazing altar. I want one. And he gets the priest to build an altar and push God's altar to the side. And then if you continue on, because I see that we are truly out of time, look at how far things devolve. If you pick up in verse 22 of 2 Chronicles 28. Now, in the time of his distress, the same king Ahaz became yet more unfaithful to the Lord, for he sacrificed the gods of Damascus, which had defeated him, and said, because the gods of the kings of Aram helped them, I will sacrifice to them, and they may help me. But they became the downfall of him and all Israel. Moreover, when Ahaz gathered together the utensils of the house of God, he cut the utensils of the house of God in pieces, and he closed the doors of the house of the Lord and made altars for himself in every corner of Jerusalem. In every city of Judah, he made high places to burn incense to other gods and provoked the Lord, the God of his father, to anger. And now Assyria is at his doorstep, and the south has to find some way to survive. That's the south story of the divided kingdom. It did not end with a good king or a good kingdom. They're going to be really fortunate to survive it all. But next time we go back and let's look at the north, and they're not going to be so fortunate. No question marks with them. They're just going to fall. So we'll look at that next time and finish off this series. Thank you, Nick. Appreciate it.